Hello and welcome to a bonus edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, where we have not one, but two pregame Tennessee interviews. So over here at the podcast show, we are doing work for you guys. So if you'll do us a super big favor, head over to Legends Drinkware, check out their phenomenal glasses. AFB10 is a promo code to get 10% off. But what I really want you to do is take a couple of minutes while the second show is running and head over to alabamafootballpodcast.com and use the contact form, or just go straight into your email machine, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. Send us a really quick email with one of your favorite Bryant Denny stories, and you'll have an opportunity to win a pair of these truly legendary drinkware glasses from Legends Drinkware. So I botched the name before, we're correcting it now, but I promise, head over, you'll enjoy the glasses, and you have a phenomenal chance to win. All right, so enough with the sales and on with the show. This is a little bit of a longer show. Ben got to talking around a couple of these topics. They're a little interesting. At the beginning, I was just trying to say something kind of nice about Jason Swain, who he does a podcast with, and he sort of went off in a couple of different directions. So I wasn't sure how loose kind of the interview was going to go. It ended up going well. It was, I thought, a good discussion. He sort of went deep into a couple topics, which I think is fine, so it went a little bit longer. What I tried to do, because we did two Tennessee interviews sort of back-to-back, I tried to mix up the questions a little bit. I probably didn't do as well as a professional interviewer would do, but it's interesting to hear the different perspectives from two Tennessee fans. There were a couple times I caught myself grinning, because between the two shows, Terry and Ben, they gave exactly the same answer. And so I thought that was funny, and I thought that was very representative of sort of the mentality within the Tennessee fan base, which is good to kind of get that that kind of perspective. So without further ado, here's Ben and Rocky Top Insider. Hey, roll tide. Hey, podcast fans, we've got a treat for you tonight. We've got Ben McKee with Rocky Top Insider. He's going to join us tonight to help decipher some of the going-ons in Knoxville and prepare us for the big game this Saturday. Ben, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Dave. How are you?
Man, I'm doing well. Doing well. Thank you. It's busy time, football season, but it's fall, the leaves turning, the crisp air. It's my favorite time of the year.
Mine as well. Doesn't get any better than this. The fourth Saturday in October this year, I do cover Tennessee for Rocky Top Insider and co-host a show with Jason Swain here in Knoxville, former Tennessee wide receiver, but went to high school in Huntsville, Alabama. So very ingrained with the Alabama-Tennessee rivalry. And although it may not be the third Saturday in October this year, I'm just thankful that the rivalry is taking place, that football season is here after an off season of uncertainty.
Right. A little bit of a season of uncertainty, but hey, you mentioned it. I've got to throw it out, man. Jason Swain, we so hoped that he was going to come to Alabama. I know that I don't know how close he was to choosing us, and sort of hindsight being, kind of what it is. But I know that we were really after him on the recruiting trail. He and some other guys, and he went the other way. So definitely a name that I remember.
Yeah. Swain actually did not come close to picking Alabama. Number two and number three to Tennessee was Georgia and Michigan. Michigan being number two, but obviously Alabama was going through a coaching change. Yep. when Swain was coming out in 2003, and he just never vibed well with Alabama. Yep. At that point. And there were some situations at his high school that kind of turned him off from Alabama as well. Sure. A guidance counselor trying to lie to the NCAA and say that he didn't correctly take his ACT because he wasn't going to Alabama. So that kind of turned him off a little bit. Obviously not Alabama football program's fault, but Alabama did not finish in the top two, top three for Swain. And it was mainly because of the circumstances of sure. Alabama going through a coaching change at that point.
There were some times, sort of in that era where I'd say the program didn't put its best foot forward. And
He's a player that we would have liked to have helped turned us around, but I don't know that we had the coaches and sort of leadership in place to help us do that at that time. But certainly a name that I remember and begrudgingly watched him have success on Saturdays in Knoxville.
Yeah, his some of his best games were actually against Alabama, and yep. Received a game ball. I think it was 2006, if I remember correctly. He got one of the game balls from the Tennessee-Alabama game. And that is one of his proudest moments, and he was a captain for that game as well. And Tennessee fans can certainly understand what you were just talking about with Alabama not necessarily putting its best foot forward with in-state talent. Tennessee's gone through that the last couple of years. You look at Cade Mays, who went to Georgia. Now he's back at Tennessee. But Cade Mays, Amari Rogers, Trevor Lawrence, not a Tennessee native, but grew up a Tennessee fan, yep. Wanted to come to Tennessee, but Butch Jones was the coach. So Tennessee fans can certainly relate over the last decade. Von Bell, Jalen Ramsey. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. T. Higgins, another big one, obviously. So Tennessee fans can certainly relate.
Sometimes you dream about what could it have been if all of those names had kind of fallen in line. I definitely understand how that works.
Absolutely, especially when you look at Tennessee's current quarterback situation and passing game to think about what could have been with Trevor Lawrence and Amari Rogers and T. Yep. Higgins certainly does not sit well with Tennessee fans.
Absolutely. Well, I can understand that. Hey, let's start with some news that you put out earlier this evening. Definitely caught my eye. We'll kind of start off the field, but there was a report that Jimmy Brumbaugh, the former defensive line coach at Tennessee, not only was he let go on Monday, but there were some reports that he was let go Saturday during the game. What's your read on that?
Yeah, that's an interesting report for sure that you're alluding to from Kentucky Sports Radio, saying that Jeremy Pruitt fired Jimmy Brumbaugh during the game on Saturday, let him go while the game was still being played, and then confirmed it after it was over. I don't know what to believe, honestly. I know that relationship between Jeremy Pruitt and Jimmy Brumbaugh was fractured well before this past weekend. So it was a definite surprise that Jeremy Pruitt decided to part ways just four games into his tenure as defensive line coach. But it's no surprise, or let me rephrase that. It's no surprise that the two separated. It's a surprise of when they separated, because going back to fall camp, that relationship was fractured, and philosophical differences is what Jeremy Pruitt cited on Monday.
Yep.
And I guess that's partly true, but it was more of Jeremy Pruitt not liking how practice was being run with the defensive line by Jimmy Brumbaugh. Jeremy Pruitt, in terms of an intensity standpoint, is Nick Saban 2.0. And if that intensity is not matched, then some coaches, as we've seen during Jeremy Pruitt's tenure, have not gotten along well with Pruitt. And I think Brumbaugh was another instance. And that just ultimately hit a boiling point that was too much to come back from. And then there were some recruiting methods as well by Brumbaugh, tactics, nothing that was illegal or anything. I'm not referring to sure. that, but just Coach Pruitt was not a fan of maybe the way Brumbaugh was going about his recruiting. Again, maybe not the same intensity as Pruitt would like to see. So that relationship was definitely fractured. So it wouldn't completely surprise me if Coach Pruitt did fire Brumbaugh in the middle of the game against Kentucky over the weekend. But to be honest with you, I don't know what to believe just because it's so outrageous to think that Jeremy Pruitt would do that.
Well, and that's you know, that was my first thought as well. Now, Alabama fans, we like Pruitt, definitely have an appreciation for him. And so that influences our perspective as well. But taking a step back, you know, not renewing Tracy Rocker last year, bringing in Brumbaugh, letting him go sort of four games into the season, letting him go mid-game, and then coming out and saying, you know, the best three practices of the season. There's a little bit of and again, we like Pruitt, but there's a little bit of, is that unhinged, or is that just, you know, being that far ahead of the curve? What's your take on that?
My take is that Jeremy Pruitt is still learning how to be a head coach. Yep. I think Jeremy Pruitt is a great just pure X's and O's football coach, a great recruiter. He has the makings to be a really good football coach. He really does. And again, I'm from Huntsville, so I have a ton of friends who went to Alabama, are really good friends of mine. And I always say that I think Mario Cristobal or Jeremy Pruitt is next in line after Nick Saban, assuming that Dabo turns down the job or doesn't leave Clemson. I think Mario Cristobal and Jeremy Pruitt as of today are maybe the next phone calls. But Pruitt has to prove that he can win before Alabama extends that job offer, I would imagine. And I do think Jeremy Pruitt will be successful as a college head football coach. The question is how successful. I don't think he'll do any worse than Butch Jones at Tennessee. And Butch Jones at his best at Tennessee was back-to-back 9-win seasons. And ultimately, Butch was fired because he had multiple teams that could have won the SEC East, and they fell way short of those expectations. And that was on top of a crumbling culture. So I don't believe that there's any way Jeremy Pruitt does worse than Butch Jones, but can he win more than that and make an appearance in Atlanta? And if he's going to make an appearance in Atlanta and beat out Georgia and Florida to make it to the SEC championship game, he's going to have to learn to be a head coach. And that is something that he has slowly gotten better at each year. The relationship between he and Tyson Helton, his first year offensive coordinator, was not good whatsoever, mainly because Pruitt couldn't stay out of the offensive meeting room. And under Jim Chaney, he's been able to do that. So you've seen steps of growth as a head coach. And I think the situation with Jimmy Brumbaugh is just a continuation of learning how to be a head coach and learning how to manage people, and not necessarily people, because he's a great coach when it comes to managing the players. The players love him. That's well documented going back to his time at Alabama with some of those Alabama defenders. But managing adults, managing a coaching staff, he's still trying to learn how to do that. And this is just another example of him having a ways to go to prove himself as a head coach, because the rap is starting to get out on him that he's not easy to work for. And if that's out there on you, it's going to be hard to make coaching hire. So Brumbaugh maybe not have been the answer, but maybe you could have gone about the situation differently to not bring a black eye to your reputation and to the Tennessee football program.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a well thought out answer. I think there's a lot of balance that goes there, and I think that's spot on. I probably surfed a couple of sites, surfed some articles, and you almost can get a tone even from some of the blog sites, right? And there were definitely a couple that I looked at that were really, really negative on Pruitt and really, really down on him. And so that's a great sort of fresh air sort of perspective that you've got there, Ben. I really appreciate that. I want to keep it off the field and maybe sort of another dynamic that Pruitt's bringing to the program. I saw, maybe I misread it, but help me understand. It sounded like that he's running Sunday night scrimmages. I don't know that I've ever heard of that type of tactic, at least recently. What's sort of your breakdown of that? What's sort of the truth of that story?
Yeah, he's conducting Sunday afternoon, Sunday night scrimmages. This past Sunday was the second scrimmage that Tennessee has held on a Sunday. And it's not Trey Smith or Henry To'o, Tennessee's best players, key starters, key contributors going out there and scrimmaging the day after they get done playing Georgia or a physical Kentucky football team. Obviously, this year has been different with COVID. Tennessee was really hit hard with contact tracing and positive COVID tests during fall camp. And what you're seeing now with Florida and Ole Miss and Missouri and LSU and some of these schools that are dealing with COVID issues right now, that's what Tennessee dealt with during fall camp and was very limited in practice. And there were a ton of young players who were unable to practice because they were in quarantine, maybe because they were hurt. So these Sunday scrimmages are geared towards those players who weren't able to really practice during fall camp to kind of make up for lost time and scrimmage on Sundays and give the coaching staff a feel for what they can do and possibly earn some trust and play on Saturday. So, for instance, Tennessee signed a high-level four-star, borderline five-star, depending on which recruiting rankings you look at, quarterback Harrison Bailey. And yep. That is obviously the hot topic in Knoxville right now is when do you allow Harrison Bailey to play? But the reason he has not played is because he was an early enrollee and spring practice was canceled. I believe Tennessee got three practices in before it was canceled due to COVID. So he didn't have the spring practice that you thought he would have. The offseason, the summer, wasn't as traditional as we are used to. Then you look at fall camp, and he was one of the players that was really hit by contact tracing. He had to quarantine twice despite not having or testing positive for COVID-19, but the regulations here in Knox County are so strict that he had to quarantine twice and miss two 14-day periods. So these Sunday scrimmages have given him a chance to kind of go out there and get some live reps along with other players who were having to quarantine during fall camp or even guys who were injured during fall camp. This is giving them an opportunity to maybe earn the trust of some coaches. And then after the first scrimmage following the Georgia game, Jeremy Pruitt said that so much good came from the scrimmage that he didn't see a reason to stop holding these scrimmages. So it's not the key players, but it's giving players who missed fall camp an opportunity to maybe earn some playing time and catch up to speed.
No, that's interesting. Harrison Bailey, he's not the only one, but he's probably the face of it, has really had a run of bad luck. And 2020 has been something for all of us, but it seemed like, you know, a five-star quarterback coming in, having the opportunity to potentially compete for the job, it seems like he's at roadblock after roadblock sort of getting his way and prevent that from happening.
Yeah, as I mentioned, he didn't get the spring practice that Tennessee's coaches thought he would get. Yep. Didn't have the summer because Tennessee's football team didn't report to Knoxville until midway through June, maybe second week of June, I believe. And typically they're there in May for the mini term. So obviously off the summer wasn't as normal as it usually is. And then again, he was dealing with contact tracing twice during fall camp. So barely practiced during fall camp. So he's been really behind the curve as a result of unfortunate circumstances. Nothing that he's done personally, sure. Just really, really bad luck.
Absolutely. Well, let's take it to the Saturday field. And Saban, I think in his press conference, talked about, you know, Tennessee competing really hard, that turnovers have really been the distance and the difference and sort of, you know, shooting the offense in the foot. And I think there's some points there. For the by and large, that comes down to the quarterback play. So talk to us about quarterback play. Is this sort of a glass half empty where it's just been a run of bad luck and you sort of get through it? Or I guess that would be half full. Or is this half empty where, you know, the position is maybe a little bit unraveling?
No, it's half empty. The quarterback position for Tennessee is just simply not good. Jarrett Garantano is a very confusing football player to evaluate. Not as much anymore because it's his fifth year playing college football. So now, I mean, he just kind of is what it is at this point. But he has the ability to make NFL throws, and he does. And he'll have a great drive, but then he'll come back the next drive and throw into triple coverage against Kentucky, throw it right to the hands of a linebacker when he has Eric Gray, the running back, over the middle of the field as his check down. Could have tossed it to him, and Gray could have run for 10, 15 yards and picked up a first down, but he throws in the triple coverage. So he makes mind-boggling decisions, but also makes great throws, which is why he continues to be trotted out there. And he also does not turn the football over in practice, which may be more of an indictment on Tennessee's secondary and creating turnovers, something Jeremy Pruitt has talked about often this season, that Tennessee's secondary needs to create more turnovers. But the position is not good right now, and it's holding Tennessee's football program back, because if you go back and you watch that first half of the Tennessee-Kentucky game, it's my opinion that Tennessee was actually the better football team. Tennessee gifted Kentucky 17 points, and Kentucky led 17-7 at halftime. I realize that bad quarterback play will take away from the overall ability of the football team, So that may sound a little weird to say, but you go back and you watch that first half, and Tennessee's offensive line was pushing Kentucky's defensive front, a good Kentucky defensive front. They were pushing them around. They were opening up holes in the running game. Eric Gray and Ty Chandler, Tennessee's two running backs, were having a really nice day on the ground as a result of that. But Tennessee's quarterback struggled and threw three consecutive interceptions. JG had back-to-back pick sixes on the first one. He was late getting the ball to the sideline, looking for a first down on third and four, and the Kentucky corner jumped it because Jarrett was late, and, I mean, he just walked into the end zone, and then he comes back the next drive. Jarrett actually drives Tennessee all the way down the field, and then he throws it into triple coverage, as I was speaking about a moment ago, and that one goes 85 yards back to the house for a touchdown. Tennessee puts in another quarterback, JT Schrout, who won the backup job during fall camp. And on his first possession, it was on second down or third down, he throws in the triple coverage and is picked off. So Kentucky's secondary didn't even really make tremendous plays on the ball. Tennessee just threw the ball straight to him. So the offensive line and the running game was going, but obviously the quarterback position held them back. And then you look at it defensively for Tennessee. Kentucky has a really strong rushing game, and Kentucky was struggling to run the football on Tennessee in the first half. And Kentucky had very little success offensively in the first half, and as a result of quarterback play, again, Kentucky was up at halftime, and I think that just dejected the morale of the team and just really hurt the defense's morale as well going into the second half. So quarterback play is just bad for Tennessee right now, and it's holding the football program back, because Tennessee is maybe not to the point of beating Alabama or beating Georgia, beating Florida, but outside of the quarterback position, Tennessee is ahead of South Carolina, Missouri, Kentucky, those second-tier, third-tier, bottom-tier teams. And JG didn't turn the football over against South Carolina and Missouri, and Tennessee won. He does turn the football over against Kentucky, and they lose. So it's really come down to turnovers for Tennessee. And again, Tennessee's quarterback position is just not good right now, and it's holding the program back.
What's the inflection point? I know you want to respect the individual, but if it's time to move on, he's a fifth-year senior. If this is what, you know, if this is sort of what he's got, not to say that he can't compete the rest of the season, but when do you sort of turn the corner, turn the page, and maybe put one of the – maybe it's Harrison, maybe it's one of the other youngsters – put them in, see what they've got for the balance of the season. When do you flip that switch?
I already should have done that, but the problem is Tennessee doesn't have anybody to turn to.
It's ready.
So I my whole thing this week has been, I don't blame Jeremy Pruitt for the decisions that he's making in-game, in-season, in terms of who he's rolling with at quarterback. I blame Jeremy Pruitt for not addressing the quarterback situation over the offseason. There were some questions about going out and getting De'Eriq King, who ultimately transferred to Miami. Tennessee was trying to, or they were in pretty good conversations with JT Daniels, but backed out of that one because they didn't want to risk potentially losing the commitment of Ty Simpson, a 2022 quarterback from the state of Tennessee that is looking at Tennessee, Alabama, and Clemson. So they didn't want to scare him off by bringing in a transfer who has 3 years left to play. But in hindsight, they absolutely should have brought in a graduate transfer quarterback. It didn't matter if De'Eriq King wasn't the perfect prospect or if JT Daniels wasn't the perfect prospect. They're better than what you have now. So I don't blame Pruitt for the in-season decisions he's making at the quarterback position, because I think he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. But he's stuck between a rock and a hard place because of the decision not to bring in a quarterback over the offseason. So they've reached that point. They've been past the point of trying to move on from Jarrett Garantano. The problem is the other options aren't better options, even as bad as Jarrett has played, because Jarrett won't turn the football over in practice, but the other two options, redshirt sophomore JT Schrout, he does turn it over in practice, and then true sophomore Brian Maurer, he turns it over in practice as well. They're turnover machines in practice. And if you're a turnover machine in practice, you're not going to be put into the game. And then, as we talked about with Harrison Bailey, he's just too far behind because of COVID.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's a fair read. I think the in season, you know, he's probably doing everything that he can. Even I would say the Sunday night, Sunday afternoon scrimmage is giving some reps to Harrison, maybe to get him ready you know, for the season. So it might be interesting this game coming up. I think you guys have a bye after the Alabama game, and so that might be an interesting opportunity to see what sort of happens there. Talk about the offensive line. You mentioned them faring fairly well against against Kentucky. It's what is it? All five stars or 1-4 in there? Alabama fans, we like Brandon Kenny. Kennedy, wish he had stayed. Wish he had stayed at Alabama. I think he'd be starting for us this year. I think he's that talented. But what's sort of the news on the the offensive front? I've heard sort of discussion that there's a lot of satisfaction with the interior of the line, but maybe less so on the tackle spots. What's your read on the O-line?
Exactly that. The tackles have struggled to start the season. You look at Wanya Morris, a true sophomore at left tackle, and Darnell Wright, a true sophomore at right tackle. Former five stars have a ton of talent, but they're still trying to come along in their development. Azeez Ojulari at Georgia really got the best of Wanya Morris against Georgia in that Georgia game. And then Darnell Wright last week, I mentioned that Tennessee's offensive line played well in the first half. They did outside of one play, and that one play was Darnell Wright giving up a sack on third down when Tennessee was in field goal range, but he gave up the sack on third down, and it pushed Tennessee out of field goal range. So the tackles have definitely struggled more so than the interior. The interior is definitely the strength of the Tennessee offensive line. Trey Smith is one of the best offensive linemen in the country, a fan favorite because he is a Tennessee native, and he plays with such a ferocious mentality, and just is a mean offensive lineman, exactly how you want your offensive lineman to be. And then you mentioned Brandon Kennedy at center. He's sort of the quarterback of the offensive line, obviously at that center position, but he has performed well. And then you look at Cade Mays, the Georgia transfer. Yeah. He's still trying to work himself into shape, but obviously he's a guy that you always want out on the field, a former five-star. And just like Trey Smith, he plays with a mean spirit to him. So Tennessee is strong along the offensive line. They looked terrible against Georgia, but I think that had more to do with Georgia's defensive front and Georgia's defensive front just simply being better than Tennessee's offensive line, even for as good as Tennessee's offensive line is. And outside of that Georgia game, they've played fairly well against Kentucky, South Carolina, and Missouri. So obviously Saturday will be a tall task for them going up against Alabama, but definitely the strength of the team, that was the thought coming into the season. And to this point, they are the strength of the team. We talked about the starters, but they can go 8, 9, 10 deep if everybody is healthy, which they do have some guys banged up right now. Wanya Morris, the sophomore left tackle I spoke about, he's dealing with an ankle injury. He is a game time decision for Saturday. And then you have some reserves, Jerome Carvin, Cooper Mays, who is the younger brother of Cade Mays. He's dealing with an injury as well. Wanya Morris is backup. Jameer Johnson at left tackle, he's also a little banged up. So when healthy, this team is or this offensive line is deep and talented, but they're a little banged up at the moment.
Talk about, that's going to be interesting to see as they start to come back to health and continue to develop. I don't know that I'd make this a prediction necessarily, but I think the second half of the season coming out of the bye, folks get healthy. Maybe there's a little more moving things around at the quarterback position. Tennessee could be a young, exciting, competitive sort of a rebranding of the team almost in the second half. Is that too dramatic a statement?
No, I think that's very realistic. And if they can find consistent quarterback play, I think that's a reality. Again, I think they should be 3-1, quite frankly. I think Tennessee is better than Kentucky, and Kentucky is a good football team. They should be 4-0 right now if they would not have had the brain farts against Ole Miss and Auburn. But I put the Kentucky loss solely on the quarterback position.
The quarterback.
Not saying that everybody else played great, but if Tennessee doesn't have the just stupid turnovers, I think Tennessee wins that football game for sure. So they should be 3-1, and then you get to looking at the rest of the schedule after Alabama. Obviously, that's going to be a loss, but You look at Arkansas. Arkansas is playing well, but I still think Tennessee has more talent and depth just by nature of where Sam Pittman is in year one and Jeremy Pruitt's in year three. I don't think Auburn is very good, so I think Tennessee is a better football team than Auburn. I think Tennessee could absolutely beat Texas A&M depending on which Kellen Mond shows up. Florida, I would pick Florida to beat Tennessee, but it's not crazy to think that Tennessee could beat Florida just based off of the way that Florida defense has looked. And then you also play Vanderbilt. So I think it's without a doubt a reasonable expectation to see Tennessee have some success the second half of the season after Alabama, after the bye week. But they're going to have to find some consistency at the quarterback position. And it really just boils down to not turning the football over.
Yep. Yep. All right. Fantastic. Let's talk about some of the skill positions there for the Volunteers. I think one of my favorite players on Tennessee's roster just to watch, I think he's dynamic out of the backfield, running and receiving. Eric Gray is definitely a player to watch. Who are some of the other players that Tide fans need to take a look at?
Yeah, Eric Gray is the number one skill player on Tennessee's offense, in my opinion. Some may say Josh Palmer, Tennessee's number one receiver. And Josh Palmer is an NFL receiver, and it's pretty cool. Josh Palmer and John Mechie, they grew up together. Both are from Canada, the same part of Canada. I can't remember off the top of my head. And I believe the Sports Center version in Canada both had them on today at the same time. And Palmer also talked about his relationship with Mechie today during his media availability. But Palmer is a future NFL receiver. He's not a Jalen Waddle or Devontae Smith or even a John Mechie, but he's a guy that is more than capable of making plays. He had two touchdowns in the first half against Georgia, and both were really nice plays. So he's a guy that can make plays out on the edge. The problem is he doesn't really have anybody that can take pressure off of him and help him out. So I imagine Alabama should have a fairly simple time phasing him out with some double coverage, because there aren't other guys that scare you at that position if you are a defense. But Palmer is a very talented player at receiver. You mentioned Eric Gray. He's uber talented. He's not Alvin Kamara, but he plays like Alvin Kamara in a sense of he can really do it all for you in your offense. Very, very shifty, kind of shorter and stocky, but is still very quick and can make a ton of plays and make defenders miss. But also Ty Chandler is the other back in the backfield. And Tennessee, or Alabama rather, will see a heavy dose of Ty Chandler and Eric Gray. Both complement each other very well. They do lack pass protection. They are not good in pass protection. And that has resulted in a couple of turnovers actually this season. So I'm sure Alabama will look to take advantage of Tennessee there. But Eric Gray, Ty Chandler, and Josh Palmer are the skill position players to watch for if you're an Alabama fan.
What about the tight end position? Alabama's really struggled guarding covering the tight end. Which of the tight ends, or is there a tight end that we can expect to beat us over the head?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Tennessee's tight end position is non-existent. Tennessee is not good at tight end. They haven't been for a couple of years now. Tennessee had Ethan Wolf during the Butch Jones era. He was solid, but not a guy that's just overly talented, not a guy that scares defenses. Tennessee really hasn't had a true tight end since Michael Rivera back in the Derek Dooley days, early 2000s. And he played in the NFL for 5, 6, 7 years. He was very talented, but Tennessee's been lacking at the tight end position since then, which is pretty sad when you consider Jason Witten, one of the greatest tight ends of all time, played at Tennessee. But they've got a guy, Hudson Wolf, coming in this next recruiting class that the coaching staff really likes. I believe Alabama was very interested in Hudson as well. So hopefully he can kind of help that position take a big step forward, because on this current team, there's just nobody that scares you. Austin Pope, the starting tight end, had back surgery in July, and he is pretty much out for the season. Hasn't been ruled out for the season, but it would be pretty surprising to see him play this year. And he wasn't a pass catcher that scared you, but he was a really good run blocker, really good in right. the running game. And Jim Chaney loves to use the tight ends in those situations. So Tennessee has really missed him from a blocking perspective, because Jacob Warren is a guy that can be a good pass catcher, doesn't have a ton of experience, but has had to add a ton of weight to get onto the field. And he's played a good bit this season. And then Princeton Fant is the other tight end to watch for. He's an athletic guy, but he's kind of a smaller tight end, not in terms of weight, but height. I think he's 6'1", 6'2". Okay. And he's a guy that's kind of really gotten an unfair hand, an unfair shake over the course of his career, bouncing from linebacker to fullback to running back, and then finally settling at tight end. So there's nobody that should scare Alabama fans at the tight end position. I would be stunned if Tennessee's tight ends have a big day on Saturday, even regardless of if Alabama has struggled defending a tight end in previous games. It would stun me if Tennessee's tight ends had a big game.
Okay. You mentioned Hudson Wolf coming in. I'm always interested in sort of legacy players, sort of almost families, you know, sort of running through. Is he related to Ethan?
He is not. Okay. It just happens to have the same last name, and they actually spell it differently. Hudson spells it W-O-L-F-E, and then Ethan spells his W-O-L-F. So okay. Hudson has an E on the end of his, but they're not related. Okay. The former Tennessee tight end, he is from Ohio, if I remember correctly. And he did actually have a brother that played for Tennessee, Eli Wolf, who ultimately transferred to Georgia as a graduate transfer because he didn't really fit the mold of what Jeremy Pruitt wanted at that position. He was more of a receiving tight end, and Pruitt wanted some more beef at that position. But Hudson is from Tennessee, actually, Savannah, Tennessee. So they are not related.
Okay. So let's talk about the defense. You mentioned the defensive line playing well. I agree, which contributes to the surprise. You know, they may not be world beaters, but I thought they were playing well, serviceable certainly, and I think even some of the metrics, you know, perhaps support that. But talk about the linebacker. Toa Toa is just, I think, a phenomenal player. I think Alabama fans were at one point really hoping that he would make the decision to come to Tuscaloosa. So we begrudgingly watch him have success. But talk about the front seven there in Tennessee land.
Yeah, Henry Toa Toa is a 3-year player, and this morning on the Swain event, we talked about Tennessee players that would start at Alabama, and I think Henry Toa Toa would start at Alabama at inside linebacker next to Dylan Moses. I realize that Christian Harris is there and Shane Lee and some other guys, but those guys are very talented, but Henry Toa Toa is just a freak. He not only can make plays, but where he wins is mentally. His football IQ is through the roof. And if I'm not mistaken, Christian Harris and Saban Lee have kind of struggled in that department because of their youth, not necessarily because they're dumb football players, but just because they are a freshman last year and now sophomores this year. But Henry Toa Toa and Dylan Moses playing next to one another, that would be a nightmare for opponents, because Toa Toa has the brain and football IQ and leadership of a fifth-year senior. I mean, he is just through the roof in terms of impressiveness. And you go back and you watch the Georgia game, and just time and time and time again, just reading the play before the ball is snapped or right when the ball is snapped and getting to where the ball is going and making a play in the backfield, even against a very talented Georgia offensive line and Georgia running backs. He had a tremendous game against Georgia. So he hasn't really been helped out with the defensive line. I think the numbers, statistically speaking, aren't a true – they don't truly tell the story. I think Tennessee's defensive line has really struggled this season, and the numbers look better than what they have because of sacks. And obviously in college, they count sack loss yardage on sacks as rushing totals. But if you go back and you take the sacks out and you look at the pure yards per rush attempt from from opposing running backs, that it's been way too high, which is why you saw a change along the defensive line, despite there being other issues on Tennessee's football team, mainly the quarterback position. So Tennessee's defensive line doesn't do a great job of keeping Henry Toa clean so he can get in the backfield and make plays, but he still manages to do so. So Toa Toa is definitely the best player on Tennessee's defense, and he's a future NFL player and three and done. I'd be surprised if he's in Knoxville past next season. Just super impressive, and as good as he is on the field, he's as awesome off the field. But next to him, Tennessee is with two young linebackers in Jeremy Banks and Kavaris Crouch, two sophomores, and they've been solid against the run, but they really struggle in pass coverage. They have been lit up over the middle of the field in pass coverage, whether it be matched up with a running back or a tight end. So I'm sure Steve Sarkisian will take plenty advantage of those guys in coverage.
Speaking of coverage, talk to me about the secondary. I don't think there's been a secondary that Mac Jones has not wanted to take a crack at. What's Tennessee got in the corner and safety positions?
Corner is definitely the strong suit with Bryce Thompson. Bryce Thompson is another guy that I don't think he would start at Alabama, but he would be competing for significant playing time for sure, opposite of Patrick Surtain. He's very talented. He's an NFL guy. He's probably a guy that declares for the draft after this season. Mm. He's very talented, a guy that can move around. But the secondary has been hampered with injuries. Sean Schamberger, the nickel, did not play in the first two games of the season. So Bryce Thompson had to move around a little bit, and you had to bring in a backup corner, and then you had to start a freshman DB at the nickel position as well. And that led to some communication issues. And even with Schamberger being back at nickel, they've had communication issues in the secondary, despite all five defensive back starters having played a pretty good amount of football for Tennessee. So that has been something that has been very frustrating for Jeremy Pruitt to watch. And they've really struggled over the middle of the field. It isn't just the linebackers in coverage. It's also been the slot receivers really giving Tennessee some issues because of the way Tennessee secondary members are lined up, or because they're not fulfilling their responsibilities on a play, or miscommunication issues. Jeremy Pruitt has been very frustrated with that position. So they haven't really given up any big plays on the edge, on the sideline, on the perimeter, but they've really been carved up over the middle of the field. Terry Wilson, Kentucky's quarterback, is not known as a prolific passer. Right. And he was 9 of 10 in the middle of the field against Tennessee last weekend. So that's an area of the field that Tennessee is really looking to improve upon.
Yeah, that's going to be some interesting matchups. So we'll see how that unfolds. Hey, Ben, let me get you out on a couple of rapid-fire questions. And so – let me throw these at you and quick answer. Or if you want to elaborate, that's cool too. Scale of 1 to 10, how bad do Tennessee fans still hate Butch Jones?
You said scale of 1 to 10, but I'm going to go 100.
Okay.
They can't stand Butch Jones.
I call Butch Jones, he's an analyst on our team now. And it looks like, if I'm at the game, not so much this season, but last couple of seasons, every time I'm watching a game, you see him on the sidelines, and it's never a picture of him, but he's in the background. Yep. He's sort of behind, or if it's a picture of practice, it's never a picture of him, but he's in the background. And so I call him our Forrest Gump, because he just, whatever the picture is, whatever the image is, he's just in the background. Just, he's just there. Scale of 1 to 10, how hot is Pruitt's seat?
Well, first off, Tennessee fans would agree with you from his time at Tennessee that he's just always in the background and never coaching. And I have a running joke on the Swain event that as long as Butch Jones is a part of Alabama's football program, Alabama will never win anything of significance. And so far, through 3 years, Alabama has yet to win anything of significance, which is a national championship. So if Alabama comes up short of a national championship this year, just remember it's because Butch Jones is on staff. And if Alabama wants to win a national championship, they have to get Butch Jones off of staff and out of Tuscaloosa.
So I see you.
That has been my running joke that Alabama will not win anything of significance until Butch Jones departs Tuscaloosa. But in terms of Jeremy Pruitt's hot seat, I would say a three. I don't think it's very hot at all. Fans are not happy with him at the moment. But Pruitt really took over a mess, and that is why Tennessee fans dislike Butch so much. And it extends, you know, past the talent and the results on the field. The culture was awful. There were so many careers, players' careers, coaches' careers that Butch Jones ruined. And the culture was just really in a bad spot. And everybody likes to point to, oh, Jeremy Pruitt inherited a roster full of four stars and whatnot. Well, those four stars did not have committable offers to Alabama, to Georgia, to Florida, to Auburn, to LSU, these teams that Tennessee should be competing against year in and year out. They could not have gone to those schools when they were committing because they did not have a committable offer. So the talent and the culture was in a terrible, terrible spot. So I think this is more of a four-year rebuild, and I think the important people know that. And I still think he's headed in the right direction if he can figure out the quarterback position. So as of right now, I say three or four at most. But okay. If you ask me at the end of the year and Tennessee has faltered against Arkansas, they're not going to falter to Vandy. Vandy's really bad. But Arkansas, A&M, Auburn, Florida, those schools, then that'll definitely rise.
Okay, okay. Vegas has installed Alabama as a 20-point favorite. That's probably still the number, you know, give or take a little bit. Are you giving or taking that number?
I think Alabama covers, whichever phrase I need to use for that. I think Alabama covers. Everybody talks about the quarterback position, and obviously that factors in. Jarrett can't turn the football over, or whoever plays quarterback can't turn the football over the way they did against Kentucky and expect to stay within the spread. But I think even more so, I don't see how Tennessee's going to defend Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, and John Metchie. They don't get a ton of pressure on the quarterback from the defensive line, and giving Mac Jones all day to throw the football is not ideal, especially when he's throwing to Waddle, Metchie, and Smitty, as you all call him. So you factor in those three receivers, Mac Jones, and Tennessee's quarterback situation, and I think Alabama 1,000% covers. I would be surprised if they don't. I wouldn't feel comfortable with a line that Tennessee covers unless we were talking 28, 30 points, somewhere in that range.
Okay, okay. Who, which Tennessee quarterback gets the most snaps on Saturday, and which Tennessee quarterback gets the most snaps after the bye the rest of the season?
I say Jarrett Garantano gets the most snaps on Saturday, just by the tone that Pruitt has used this week. Doesn't seem like he's ready to put him on the bench, because I think he and everybody in the program realizes that if Tennessee is going to have a somewhat successful season this year and in the season on a high note, that it's going to be because Jarrett Garantano plays turnover-free football. He has the highest ceiling, even if that ceiling isn't the highest. So I think JG gets the most snaps this weekend. And not to cop out on your second question, but it depends on JG who gets the most snaps against Arkansas. I think if he plays somewhat well against Alabama, I think he will. If he doesn't, then I think Pruitt will spend next week, the bye week, and Arkansas week getting Harrison Bailey ready to play, or Brian Maurer, who sparked the team a little bit last season, but has dealt with nagging injuries and needs to do some maturing off the field. So if JG performs poorly, I think it'll be Harrison Bailey or Brian Maurer that gets the most snaps against Arkansas.
All right, let's finish with a fun one. All-time favorite Tennessee player.
Ooh, all-time Eric Berry, without a doubt. Eric Berry.
Yep.
I'm a younger Tennessee fan, so Eric Berry was without a doubt my first true favorite Tennessee player, and he's the reason number 14 is my favorite number. Unfortunately, I did not get to grow up in the 90s and early 2000s watching Peyton and Al Wilson and Leonard Little and Jamal Lewis and Jason Witten and so on and so forth. I was alive then, but I was born in 95, so I didn't really truly start paying attention and understanding Tennessee football and what, 8, 9, 10 years old. So mid 2000s in the Fulmer era. So unfortunately for me, the end of Fulmer, Dooley, Butch, and now Pruitt has been the eras that I have grown up on, but Eric Berry without a doubt is my favorite Tennessee football player of all time.
No, that's a good one. That's a good one. I'm from Nashville originally, and I'll definitely have to show my age here. But one of my favorite all-time Tennessee players is the late Reggie Cobb. He was quite talented, just brutal at the running back position, and he was always fun to watch. So, fantastic. Hey Ben, it's been a pleasure. It's been great talking ball with you. I'm gonna wish you luck the second half of the season. You'll understand if I can't extend much of that on Saturday, right?
Absolutely. I've joked all week that I'm just pretending that the game is actually not being played this Saturday, pretending that Tennessee and Alabama aren't playing on Saturday. So I'm just ready to close my eyes and get through this football game and get through the bye week and on to Arkansas, as Bill Belichick would say. But I appreciate you having me on. Absolutely. I enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks, Ben. You have a good one now.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Take care. Hey, Ben, I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Hey, you have a great evening. And like I said, enjoy the game Saturday. And it will be interesting to see how the second half of the season unfolds. Like you said, I think it's JG's job to sort of keep or lose. But it might be interesting if there's a little bit of sort of a youth movement, even if it's just a two-quarterback system or increased rotation. I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where the inflection point is on riding this season out versus, building for next year. I am really surprised it's sort of the left turn this season, you know, took. You guys started 0-2, much like I kind of figured you would. Georgia game, I thought that might be a little bit closer, and then Kentucky, I just was gobsmacked by that. So,
yeah,
there's a lot of talent to turn around.
Yeah, it's turnovers. Tennessee was within a touchdown of Georgia at the end of the third quarter, but then turnovers bit them in the butt there. And then bad quarterback play is, in my opinion, the biggest reason and main reason, only reason that they lost to Kentucky.
Yep. Those tend to come in batches, right? Or, you know, bunches, right? And so, if yep. you know, your defense sort of gets them in a bunch, and then your offense seems to give them up in a bunch. And you'd always rather get them than give them. But they always seem to come in bunches. And so maybe that's something that they can kind of play their way through. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, there was not a turnover in the first 10 quarters of the season until the third quarter of the Georgia game. Tennessee was the last team to turn it over in the SEC, and now they've had 6 or 7 in the last 6 quarters after not turning it over once in the first 10. So that's sports, I guess.
That is. That is. Hey, Ben, you have a great evening, man. I appreciate you being on, and you guys have a great second half of the season.
We'll try. I appreciate you having me on, my friend.
All right. Thanks, man.
Bye. Yes, sir. See you.